Welcome to the Business Radio Network. Enjoy Small Biz, Big Voices with Stephanie Rising.
Hi, I'm Stephanie Rising, a business coach and author in beautiful Tucson, Arizona. Being a small business owner is rewarding, but can feel lonely. Few people understand what it's like to sweat payroll, market themselves as a brand, or create revenue streams from scratch. For the next hour, join your tribe on Small Biz Big Voices, the podcast that celebrates the stories and impact of your fellow small business owners. Today, I'm hosting a panel of chefs that include Mary Steiger of Gourmet Girls Gluten-Free Bakery Bistro, Rebecca Wicker of Dedicated Gluten-Free Bakery and Coffee Shop, and Sigrid Thompson of The Tasteful Kitchen. Our interview will conclude with a Proust lightning round, and our final segment will be Dear Coach, when I'll coach listeners through issues they've emailed in. First, it's my pleasure to introduce three remarkable women chefs. Mary Steiger attended the prestigious Scottsdale Culinary Institute, graduating valedictorian of her class. She worked as a pastry chef in a variety of high-end venues, managed several large retail bakeries, and owned and operated a bed and breakfast. With her business partner, Susan, Mary began developing gluten-free recipes to make delicious, allergy-friendly food available to more Tucsonans. They began selling their products at local farmers markets and developed a loyal following. They successfully launched their restaurant, Gourmet Girls Gluten-Free Bakery Bistro, in 2011. Rebecca Wicker believes that being gluten-free shouldn't mean that your food tastes bad or is super expensive. She and her husband created a dedicated gluten-free bakery and coffee shop to serve the community. They are proud to share their delicious baked treats with their fellow GFers. Dedicated has a line of retail products available, and they supply restaurants and special events with a wide assortment of items. They continually strive for innovation, yet they're still making their creations the way grandma made them. Sigrid Thompson has been passionate about cooking since she was a child, but it didn't become more than a hobby until her early 20s, after she began working in the food and hospitality industry. She moved around the globe, spending time in New York, London, and Sydney, and expanded her reach as a personal trainer. In 2011, Sigrid and her sister, Kian, jumped at an opportunity to enter the catering business. Less than a year later, they opened a full restaurant offering an exclusively vegetarian menu. Ladies, welcome to the show, and thank you very much for spending time with us today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Food plays such a huge role in our sense memory. Like, to this day, if I smell onions slowly cooking in butter on the stove, I am just instantly standing next to my mother in her kitchen. It doesn't matter where I am. Are there particular food rituals or dishes from your childhood that inspired your love of cooking? And Mary, I'll start with you.
Well, I have a similar thing going on because I can remember my mom in the kitchen baking. So I have a cooking background and a baking background, but it all started with that baking and that sweet, sugary chocolate smell in the air, very similar to yours. I just was drawn to it, and it just brought the family together. So I would have to say we baked something every single day.
Did you really?
Yes, yes. And that's how I learned. We started off with cake boxes and brownie box mixes and things like that, and that's where I learned my fractions and how to add this and mix this and cream that. To create, you know, this wonderful, tasty desserts.
Do you think you have to be good at math to be a really good baker? Like, my sister-in-law is a math chick. She's a math and science chick. And she's very precise. And she can bake anything. And I am not nearly at her level.
I absolutely believe you have to be good at math. Because baking is a science.
Yes.
You know, cooking is art. But baking is a science, so yes, you've got to be good at math.
Yeah.
That's why I don't bake. could not pass math in college. I could not.
I was an English major, so you know how my cookies are turning out.
And I like to say I'm a recovering accountant, so this worked out.
Oh, wow. Yeah,
so right on. See? This is putting my theory to the test.
I think so.
Correct.
Now, what about you?
Very similar memory about the smell of onion, especially celery and onion in the morning. This time of year reminds me of my mom and my grandma in the kitchen making stuffing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you don't smell onion at 6 a.m. unless it's Thanksgiving morning. And so that for me is very sensory memory.
Yeah.
One of my other favorite childhood memories around cooking was that every year on the first day of school, my mom would make homemade cookies. Mm-hmm. And she didn't always bake, but it was special. And it was something that we knew was going to happen, but it was still special. And we would come home and the house smelled like chocolate chip cookies and brown sugar. And unlike you with the cookies all the time and that sweet smell in the air, like we knew that it was going to happen on the first day of school, which made it super cool.
Right on.
Yeah.
And it kind of takes the sting out of losing your summer vacation.
A little bit, because sugar can solve problems, as we learned from our mothers and our grandmothers.
Yes. I think it can solve any problem.
That's right. That's right. Nothing a chocolate chip cookie can't solve.
Exactly. Secret, how about you?
I'd have to say that this time of year really kind of sparks childhood memories for me as well, with like the savory cooking of, you know, bringing in all the different herbs like thyme and rosemary and sage and all that. It just has that wholesome comfort feeling.
Yeah.
That, you know, reminds me of my mom's Thanksgiving dinner type thing. It's just, I love working with fall produce. It's great to be working with different squashes and the herbs. And so, yes, all those smells remind me of home.
Is there something in particular that you loved to eat as a child, and now you've, because of how you eat now as a vegetarian, like you've had to figure out the workaround? Like what was the toughest mystery to solve?
Well, we're not trying to make anything look like meat or so like one of my favorite dishes when I was a kid was my mom's stuffed cabbage. We're Hungarian, and her cabbage was amazing. And so I've tried to recreate that in a vegan way. And I think I did a pretty good job. I just did like a mushroom, rice, lentil filling inside the cabbage, and then cooked it sort of similar with the way my mom did in the tomato juice, braised it in the tomato juice. And I think I got my mom's approval. I sent it home and they tried it, and I think she liked it.
Where does she live?
She lives just down the street from here, literally on Central Tucson.
Okay, so it wasn't like you had to pack this on dry ice or anything.
It wasn't like I was shipping it into another country. No, she lives just down the street, so.
Yeah, but to get mom's stamp of approval is a big deal.
Yeah.
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 Now, how about you, Rebecca and Mary, because you're now gluten-free. And I bring this up because I ate anything and everything as a kid. And I haven't totally given up meat, but I'm definitely trying to be a little more plant forward in my diet, just to be environmentally friendly. I can't eat gluten, among a host of other things. And so, like, I've spent the last 6 years like just trying to maintain that connection with those childhood dishes. But it's been tough to crack the code with certain recipes. I mean, you figured out challah, which I have no idea how you did that, but I applaud you.
A little divine intervention, perhaps. I think for me, that the sensory memory piece of food and then the feeling excluded because I can't eat that. And I've lately adopted this phrase, a nutritional outcast, where you're like, you're sitting there and everybody is just chowing down on all the goods and you're like, awesome, I'll have celery. You know, and so bread was tough. Bread was super tough.
Yeah.
It was maybe a week before we were ready to open, and I was like, well, we don't have bread, so that's a problem. We've got everything else, but we don't have bread. And so, I played around and played around and played around with lots of different flours until it just worked. And then in typical Rebecca fashion, there was some swearing and, oh my gosh, what did I even do to try to recreate? Like, it was about, you know, a smidge of this and a handful of that and hoping that I could recreate it. But our challah tastes like challah. There are a few things that I thought, and we use the same blend for all of the breads. And so there's a bread blend. And then there's our perfect flour. And we call it perfect flour because it just works. And it's the same blend that we use in the muffins and the cupcakes and the scones and the cookies and, you know, all of my mom's old recipes.
Yeah.
And it just works. And when I figured out that blend, I was making peanut butter cookies and they worked. And it was, you know, that moment of panic of like, how much of what did I have in there? But then I tried it in different things and it kept working. And I kept thinking, like, there are some things that there's no way that I can make a pâte à choux. There's no way that it's going to, like, it's not going to stand up to angel food cake. Come on. But it does. And so there's something about that blend that I feel like I have to take credit for it because it happened in my kitchen with my hands. But there was some piece of something that was quite extraordinary, like that made
fairy
that happen.
Dust.
Yeah, a little bit of something special that made that happen.
That's cute.
Because it just works. And and really, if you just use the same recipe that your mom always used and you use that flour, it comes out. So I feel very, very fortunate.
That's awesome. Well, all of Tucson is fortunate.
And people all over, because apparently we ship things all over the country now. So
I have met so many people who have been diagnosed with food allergies midlife. This is only
a
6-year thing for me, and I'm 46. So for 40 years, I ate whatever I wanted without
all
consequence. And then all of a sudden, you have insomnia for reasons you cannot seem to fathom. And if you take out gluten, you sleep at night.
Right.
But like you said, you turn into this gastronomic pariah and you're tired of telling everyone before you come over for dinner, oh, here's my list of 10 things that I can't
Thanks
have.
For inviting me over. Yeah. I won't be able to eat anything you make for me.
Exactly.
Right.
So, and I know you had to change your diet for medical reasons as well. You were starting to get arthritis, which
really
is
bad.
No bueno for a cook.
Right, or exactly. Anyone,
or
for
anyone.
That matter.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was horrible. You know, muscle pain, joint pain, inability to move and wake up in the morning, getting out of bed and taking 10 steps before you could actually warm up and get moving at your regular speed. And I took gluten out of my diet, and 4 days later, it was miraculous. Absolutely miraculous, getting around and just feeling youthful again and full of spunk and vinegar and ready to go. So it made a huge difference.
Yeah.
Absolutely made a huge difference. And I lost 26 pounds.
Just taking gluten out.
Just taking gluten out. Well, now that I can bake gluten.
Right, yeah, I gained 50 pounds.
Exactly.
Right.
But, you know, that whole process, it was really, really good to see. And it affects each person differently. Gluten in your diet causes inflammation. And, gluten inflammation is like
the
root of all disease. So,
yeah. What was the toughest thing for you to figure out how to make and to cross over from your pre-gluten days?
Oh, well, bagels.
Yeah.
Bagels. And doing them the traditional way, we just found out that doesn't work. So we do have a wonderful recipe that we use. So we don't boil them or anything, but we do bake them, and they're absolutely fabulous. And talk about trial and error. My business partner, Susan, we'd bake them at her house and, you know, trial and error again and again. And we'd toss them out the back door and feed the coyotes until one day they just said, oi, no more.
No more bagels. No more.
We're not eating those things. So, like Rebecca, you know, we've got blends that we use too. And it's very similar to yours. We've come across one that we call the classic blends. So yours is the perfect and ours is a classic. And we have like 5 other blends that we use to produce different products. So the cookies and the quick breads and the cakes and things, we use that classic blend. Mm-hmm. And then we've got English muffins and French bread that's absolutely to die for, and different sandwich breads and tortillas. And So we've come a long way. Remember 10 years ago?
I do.
Gluten-free products, just
It was so horrible.
It was horrible.
Yeah.
It was like eating chalk or a brick. Mm.
With a little sawdust mixed
like
in.
Like sawdust.
Yeah,
it was integrating cardboard.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, which is why we started this, right?
Exactly.
I'm sure yours was very similar. Like it can't possibly taste that bad and be that expensive at the same time.
Exactly. Yeah.
So there's got to be a way to make it not sucky.
Yeah. We started catering, like Sigrid, and we started catering, and then we had a guest that wanted to provide gluten-free for her, a host who wanted to provide gluten-free. And we thought we'd just go out and buy some bread and little frozen cupcakes, and we can display them really nice and everything. And then we tried them, and there was just no way we were going to put our names on that. And so that's when the creative forces, you know, I've been doing this for 25 years. We got this. First couple of things came out like, wow, this is so easy. I don't know what these people are talking about. And then, you know, this is hard.
Yeah,
this is
really lot of trial and error. But you guys figured out challah bagels and vegetarian stuffed cabbage. And half my family are Hungarian Jews. And so my grandparents are totally smiling right now.
Cool. That's great.
Now, something else I wanted to talk to the three of you about today is the fact that you each have niche markets. Like, as a business coach, I find myself routinely chanting, you can sell to anyone, but who you market to should be specific. You know, like, your ideal client should be guiding your decisions. But I think that a lot of business owners freak out about being too focus because they think that they're going to leave revenue on the table. But the three of you very much started your restaurants on your own terms with a specific niche in mind. And I'm wondering if you ever had any doubts about how your concept was going to be embraced and what has actually proven to be true. And Sigrid, I'm going to start with you on this one.
Okay. So the reason why I started the Tasteful Kitchen with my sister was we knew that Tucson needed this, or at least we thought Tucson needed it. We're sitting there talking about our concept, and I'm like, well, look, you know, I love to cook vegetarian. That's what I gravitate towards. That's what I've always loved. I just love vegetables. And I'm like, this is what I'm good at. So, and let's think about this for a second. How many vegetarian restaurants are there in Tucson? And at that time, there was two. And I'm like, this is kind of a no-brainer. I think we could really get this. And, you know, since there's only two, we'll have people be lined up outside the door. And didn't really go off like that. It took a long time to get people on board. But, you know, once they found out about us, people have been coming back for years and years. So yeah, that was kind of the driving force why we started our particular niche business, was because we thought Tucson needed it. And, you know, sometimes we're like, I don't know if Tucson even knows we're here right now, but, you know.
But you stuck to your guns.
Stuck to the guns. Yep. And while we you know, everything's trial and error and working things out and getting going. And what we noticed was people's growing awareness of their dietary issues and needs. And so that's when I went from wanting to do classic vegetarian to, you know, let's do a little bit of everything. So we'll have something to offer all, like, the whole entire vegetarian spectrum, from raw vegan to, you know, gluten-free, dairy-free, you know, classic vegetarian. And so over time, it was actually easier to just make everything vegan and almost everything gluten-free, because we knew that everyone can eat that way.
Right.
And, you know, nobody's excluded from that, but people, not everyone would agree with me on that. So yeah, that's kind of how it sort of evolved, just with knowing what people were asking for and what they needed. So we just kept going down the road of, you know, trying to appeal to everyone. And then in doing that, it almost made it too exclusive. Because now, if we do happen to do a special with, you know, some organic eggs in it, or some, you know, some cheese. Mm-hmm. People are like, whoa, wait a minute. I thought you guys were a vegan restaurant. And I'm like, no, it's always been vegetarian. And I, you know, I kind of like to have a little space here to do some other things, you know. So I almost felt kind of pigeonholed there for, you know, and I still do at times feel like we were kind of like stereotyped and put into sort of that kind of classification where that's why I'm like happy to be here right now so I can tell the world how I feel about all these things. But anyways, yeah, that's pretty much how our concept happened.
Was. So kind of interesting that you started already with a very specific concept and the market wanted you to go even more narrow than that, which creatively restricted you. So there was like no danger of you running out of opportunities to be a presence in the market. Kind of the only danger was impediments on your own creativity.
Yeah.
Because of the market.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It made it very challenging.
I bet.
You know, to figure out how to make everything vegan. And as far as with what I do gluten-free, I'm not a baker. So I just stick with what I know that is gluten-free. And, you know, I just keep it simple. Mm-hmm. So.
Well, you make the sexiest vegetables in Tucson.
Thank
I can say that.
I love that. Sexy vegetables. Yes.
I don't miss the meat at all. And I usually enjoy like a nice filet or something like that. But when I've eaten at your restaurant, your flavor profiles are amazing. And what you can do with a vegetarian palate is remarkable. So thank you.
You're welcome.
I've been well fed.
Good. I'm glad you've enjoyed it. Yes.
Now, what about Rebecca and Mary, kind of your respective takes on going gluten-free? Were you concerned about what you weren't going to be able to provide? Or did you also take a look around, feel like, well, nobody's really representing this segment and felt that the more specific you were, the more you were actually fulfilling a need?
Well, yeah, well, you were here first, and really no one was doing it then at all.
Well, for me, it all started, of course, with that little party that we catered. And then at the bed and breakfast, I had a gal come and stay with me and couldn't eat anything. I could not wrap my head around what you can't eat eggs, you can't do dairy, you can't do soy, you can't do this. And I am a let me feed you person. Let me, warmth and happiness and all that comes with food. And I just talked to her for hours. They were there for a religious retreat. And I talked to this gal for hours on end, trying to understand and see, give me information. And then in that same area that I live, I had a gal ask me to make a gluten-free wedding cake for her. Oh, gluten-free. Oh, my gosh. I've got to learn about this. And so we did the wedding cake, and it went over really well. I switched out that flour, and she was happy with the cake. And started talking to Susan about, what do you think about this gluten-free thing? You know?
Yeah.
I think there really is a need for this. Really is.
For
I think
sure.
It's just going to grow and grow. And so we hit the farmers markets with our products and developed something new every week at the farmers market. And it grew at the market, and we got more people coming in and just interested in the products that we had. So we did that for about a year and a half. And a half a year into that, we actually were looking for a brick-and-mortar spot to see if we could do this. But it was really scary. Mm-hmm. Will this take hold? Will this really work? Will this be able to sustain us? Will this sustain the community, the whole thing? But in that year's time, more and more people came to the farmer's market, and we just knew that this was going to work. There was really a need for this. And so when we got our place, we had actually people waiting to get into that restaurant. And so it was really exciting that way. And the other thing, we didn't know if we wanted to be a restaurant. We didn't know if we wanted to be a bakery, jump in both feet. So we did.
And there's no looking back.
There's no looking back. So I had a lot of requests for gluten-free items as a baker, but Rebecca, you had a medical
Yeah. So my husband. Kidding. Yeah. So my husband Gordon was misdiagnosed with lupus for almost 15 years, wow. And he doesn't have lupus. What he has is a whole lot of doctors who didn't know what they were doing. He finally went to a new doctor who said, "So humor me, if the blood work says you don't have lupus, let's just, you know, we're treating all the symptoms. Let's figure out what actually is going on." And what they found in this battery of allergy testing is that he has a very severe wheat allergy. And wheat preservative MSG equals Gordon gets an EpiPen. So it's been super scary a couple of times, you know, especially in those years of trying to figure out what was going on. And so really, I started this completely different, not looking for a business at all. I'm an accountant. Life is fine. And I just didn't like what I could find in the grocery store. Like, it was horrible. It was
exactly.
The texture is bad, the taste is bad. Yeah. It's $9 for, like, forget it. Like, and a life without carbs. No offense.
Sucks.
Not gonna do it.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Right? And so I started just playing around with different flour blends that were available at the time, and still still just not what I wanted them to be. And so I just started playing around with the raw flours. And if I ate a little bit of this and a little bit of this and a little bit, and I was just trying to feed my family.
Yeah.
And so then anytime we had a meeting or a family event or any excuse for me to bake something, it was an excuse for me to bake something. And so people would say, "You should open a bakery." And I would say, "I'm an accountant," and sometimes, you know, some finger gestures that went along with it, depending on how well I knew them. Never going to happen. But I was really at a point in my career where I was kind of done with, like, if I have to do W-2s one more time, right?
Yeah.
So here I am doing W-2s, right? But I was kind of done with the accounting world, and looking for something different. And I really missed, I had been in nonprofit accounting a lot and had gotten away from that and back into the mortgage industry. And I missed that service to the community. And so the more I talked to people or the more they talked to me, it really became like, wow. Everybody kept saying, "Let me know when you open, I'll go there." And initially we were thinking like, okay, so we'll do wholesale and we'll solve this problem where everything sucks and we'll supply the supermarkets. And everybody kept saying, "Well, let me know and I'll come knock on the back door." And I'm like, "Oh my God, I'm going to have a retail front end. I'm going to have a retail side. You know, I'm an accountant for a reason. Shut my door and leave me alone." it was a real switch.
Yeah, very much.
Yeah. It's been beautiful and amazing. And the amount of people that we serve and make happy that feel like they can participate in Thanksgiving because there's stuffing that they can eat.
They feel like they can be normal again.
They feel like they can be normal. Yeah. It's huge.
It's huge psychologically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I know it's made an enormous difference for me because I found out I couldn't have gluten, dairy, or eggs. So when life as you know it kind of comes to an end, and you don't think that this is such a big deal. I mean, I know people who don't have allergies, they talk about food allergies like, "You're just a sensitive snowflake and why can't you buck up? Like, right. How come your system can't handle bread?" Well, like, if you break out into eczema and you have insomnia and brain fog, it's not about the ingredients. It's about your quality of life.
Right.
And trying to find solutions to that, it took me 6 months, like hardcore, ordering all new cookbooks, research online, going out to different restaurants. It took me 6 months to figure out how to eat in a way that doesn't make me sick.
Shock to the system.
It is. Shock. And you don't think about it until you go over to someone's house for dinner. And then it is this series of, "I'm sorry, I can't eat that. I'm sorry, I can't eat that. I'm sorry, this looks like you put a lot of effort into this. I can't eat that." And so for people who do have restrictions in their diet, what the three of you are accomplishing is a very big deal, and you've also been keeping me very well fed for years, so thank you. We're going to take a quick break. This is Small Biz Big Voices, hosted by Stephanie Rising. I'm a small business coach on a mission to get business owners off their hamster wheel and empower them as authentic and influential leaders. My coaching program centers around the 7 primal business needs. Today, I'm visiting with chefs Mary Steiger, Rebecca Wicker, and Sigrid Thompson. Women still only make up around 21% of all head chefs. So women chefs are managing a typically male-dominated staff under fast-paced and competitive conditions. I think that sometimes people don't always know how to interact with feminine energy in their leader. I know some women who feel like if they're calm and they're courteous, things don't always get done. But if they act more aggressively, they either see results, experience resentment, or a combination of both. I'd like to know if you ladies have ever struggled with feeling like you have to alter your personality in order to lead your kitchen. And Rebecca, I'm going to start with you.
And I love that you're starting with me on this one. So, and I alluded to it before, I grew up in my career in a really male-dominated industry. And unlike many of my peers, I didn't really ever feel like it was an issue. I just did me, and if they didn't like it, then that was their problem. Sure. In the restaurant business, I don't really see the gender issue being as much of an issue as I see more of a generational issue for me. Mm-hmm. The part where I've had to change my personality is really more about learning how to manage this new way of being that that children are today, and children, you know, is everybody under 30 when you're my age. but there's something about the millennials and now the Gen Z that's coming in where in my generation, you go to work, you get a job, and you stay there, you know, forever, you know, 10 years or whatever. And it's all about making money. And now it's really that they want to make an impact and they want to feel that they're important and that what they're doing means something. And that's it's beautiful. But learning how to manage these kids is really different than managing 14-degreed accountants in a department all in cubicles who are just there for a paycheck, right? So it's, for me, the part that has really been the challenge is learning how to manage my staff differently in a way that they can hear, that works for them, that works for both of us.
Mentorship is, it's a lot more time consuming. It can be a lot more rewarding, but it's, you're the head chef and you're running a business and you have personal obligations
and
now you've got to carve out time to really be a patient mentor. And that's not a small thing.
It's huge. And some of them really need that. And some of them it's as simple as figuring out what it is that they need and finding the person on the staff who is all about social justice and how can, okay, so that's great. What can we do in our world to give you that voice, to make you heard so that you're able to feel fulfilled when you come here while still making sandwiches for me? Because what I'm paying you to do is make the sandwiches, right?
Right.
And so it's really been an interesting learning experience with staff. I would imagine, in secret, you have a very small crew, but Gourmet Girls, you've got to have twice as many people as we do. And so I'm sure you've had a similar kind of experience, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And I find that when I was working under somebody else, there was really no problem with the gender in the other 79% male-dominated, male chefs and everything. So I didn't have issues working with male chefs. I have had some problems at the restaurant with male employees, but I agree completely with what you're saying as far as them getting on board with our mission and them having a purpose. I have one employee who's come to us. He's been with us for about 4 months now. He is absolutely stellar. with wanting to get involved and making sure that everybody's experience is just wonderful at the restaurant, and that he connects with them. And then in the kitchen, he always also works in the kitchen, and learning everything and having the explaining everything and mentoring. And he's just he's the ideal employee for me, because
I am. Is he available for cloning?
Well,
yes,
two older brothers, much older, but we were. I find myself being more of a teacher and a coach, and spending that time with them, it gives me satisfaction in knowing that they're listening and they want to take it in. So the employees that are male, that have a problem, don't want to learn, that they feel like they know it, and they drift off and do things their way. And then in our business, you have to be really careful, because we're watching out for all those allergies and things that people can't have. And you've just got to be focused on that. So I don't want to make it sound like it's all glam and glory and everybody's great. And you come in and they train them. And you there are some that just don't make it. There are some that just don't get on board. And you have to let them go. But that also raises the rest of the employees up when you don't have that other negative energy there.
Yes.
100%.
And then they just grow and foster other employees that are coming in. So, yeah, I just...
Just managing people is super tough.
That's more what it is. It's just managing people. And you're right, with all these different generations that we've got coming in, and we have a little fun thing that we say at Gourmet Girls. We love it when grown-ups come in and work for us.
Yeah, it's a lot so easier, different. You know, and we definitely have had grown-ups that are 22 years old.
Yes.
And we've had millennials that are 40.
I've got a 19-year-old who's a grown-up.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Yeah.
So they're all so interesting, and they bring so much to the table, and they all... They just really want to jump on board with our purpose, taking care of our customers and their allergies. I have a server who gets very anxious, and especially when she first started working for us, making a mistake and not saying the right thing that has dairy in her, that has egg in her, that has soy in it. So she worked so hard to basically memorize our ingredients and memorize the product and get it right.
Yeah, we've got a kid who made a Quizlet, like an online Quizlet for how to make sandwiches on the deli. And I'm like, well, of course you did, right? because he's that kid.
Yes, he's that kid.
And now he tells everybody who's going to work on the deli, like, I made a Quizlet, right? He's a basis kid, so of course he did.
Of course he did.
But it's that kind of fire, right? And he's teachable, and he's going to do great things. Mm-hmm. And it's... unfortunately, they're not all like that, and so when you're hiring around your values, it's sometimes
exactly those values,
whether you're coachable is definitely not determined by gender.
Exactly.
For sure. It got to a point a couple years ago where I just decided, you know, really, it's about who you are.
Yeah.
Because I can teach you how to pull shots of espresso. I can teach you how to make a sandwich. I can teach you how to bake. I can't teach you how to not be a jerk. The core pieces, like if your mom didn't teach you when you were 2 years old that it's not okay to steal, I can't fix that.
Right. Right.
So really what we're looking for is really great people who want to be
taught. They're coachable.
Who want to serve the community the same way that we do. And so that's the piece.
Yeah. That is the piece.
Is that true for you as well, Sigrid? Is it more a matter of generation than gender when it comes to the kitchen?
I have to say that I don't know if I've really experienced that. I've been very fortunate that I've had the same chef with me for like 5-6 years now.
And that's great.
My other chef, he was with me for 3 years. So like we've got staying power. Like, you know, we don't have a turnover. So I haven't had to deal with too many different personality types.
That's beautiful.
And yeah, so that's nice. Been nice. But
that's nice.
You know, and because we're so small, I do so much of it myself. You know, my sister and I, we do so much of the business. Mm-hmm. We are owner operated,
yeah.
You know? And so literally the little bit of staff that I have, is just, you know, it's a couple of people just helping me out. So, I mean, it's just, it's more like just hanging out in the kitchen with friends and family mm-hmm. sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So
that's cool.
It's pretty casual.
Stay small. Stay small.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. There is no.
From this side of the table to that. Stay small. Yeah.
People have said, oh, well, you know, a location on the east side would be great. Exactly. A location up in Oro Valley would be great.
We hear it all the time.
How am I supposed to be in three places at once? Exactly. You know, because
it's hard enough to be in one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right?
And, you know, the two of us, we've total control freaks. So it's like, well, how are we supposed to run other locations? Like, well, you have to hire people. And we're like, what?
Well, the thing is to do it really well, right? Yeah. I mean, it's got to be you and it's got to be your vision.
Well, people want that too. When they come into the restaurant, they want to know that it's
you.
The chef and the owner mm-hmm. and everybody
right.
is there.
And where's Rebecca? Like, I had to go to the bathroom. Once in a while, sometimes I'm the one who makes the deposit. You know, like I'm not there every day.
Yeah.
But the expectation certainly from the public is that we're there 24/7. And yet, can you open four or five more locations? Mm-hmm. Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Clone yourself.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. They still want that extremely personal experience. Mm-hmm. They just want the convenience of it anywhere
in their own
time.
Neighborhood. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Which I get. I mean, when you find something that you love, you just want more of it. But
do you get people from coming in around the different parts of the country asking you to franchise?
Oh yes, all the time, all the time. Mm-hmm. And the best we can do is ship things to them, and we like to ship on Mondays and Tuesdays so that it doesn't get stale over the weekend.
We do that too. Yeah.
It's always fascinating to me, and I'm sure you hear this too, that legit towns. There's nothing like this where I come from. And it's a town like, like Boston,
San Diego.
San Diego, Orange County.
Boston,
we hear this all the time. There's nothing like this in Colorado Springs. Like, mm-hmm. what? Yeah.
We hear this. We hear this all the time, too.
Yeah.
And people from New York, Seattle, San Francisco saying, wow, you know, we've been to vegetarian places in these, you know, major cities, and there's nothing like this. And I'm like, whoa, that's a really high compliment.
I think that's interesting.
Yeah. You're cooking vegetables.
Right. I'm just here doing my thing.
Yeah.
I think
Tucson
that
is a gastronomic city.
That's exactly what I was thinking, is that there's something about Tucson, and the city of gastronomy designation is not just not just a thing that we applied for and got, but we actually do some pretty cool stuff here.
Yeah, we do.
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Thank God.
Yeah.
And we're here.
Makes me very
happy. We're here, which makes it even better. Yes.
Well, to experience for yourselves all of the deliciousness on offer at Gourmet Girls Gluten Free Bakery Bistro, dedicated gluten free bakery and coffee shop, and the Tasteful Kitchen, check out today's show notes because we're going to have all of the contact information you'll need to feed your soul. We are going to move on to the Proust Lightning Round.
Yikes.
Strictly for fun. No worries. The Proust questionnaire was a parlor game made popular by the French essayist and novelist Marcel Proust. He believed that by answering 35 specific questions, an individual reveals their true nature. We're going to go through as many questions as we can in 3 minutes. So I'll ask a question. Rebecca, I'll start with you.
Oh, no.
Then Mary, then Sigrid. We'll just go around the table and you just say the first thing that comes
Pass.
To your mind. You're already playing that card.
No.
Like, we're not even the first question. You're wimping out on me.
No, I'm not. Okay. All right.
You ready?
I'm ready.
You'll be pleasantly surprised.
Okay.
The first question is, I feel like we're playing password.
I know. I'm like, seven.
What is your idea of perfect happiness?
Oh, on the beach.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Love it.
Mm-hmm.
Same.
Yep.
Same.
Totally.
Yeah.
Up in the mountains.
Oh.
I'm a mountain girl.
Oh, okay.
With a lake, but a mountain girl.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll send you a postcard from the beach.
All right.
Beach.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which living person do you most admire?
Was that me again?
Yep. I'm just going left to right.
Oh. I don't know.
I'll circle back around.
Circle back around. Come back to me.
My mom.
Nice.
My mom. She's amazing.
But I would have to say my parents.
Yeah.
Yeah. I can't pick one over the other. So my folks, they're amazing.
Yeah.
They do our baking for us. So
Nice.
They're awesome.
That
they're in their 80s and they make amazing cakes. And yeah. So we're very fortunate to have our folks helping us out too. So it's a family show over here, you know.
And your sister is your business partner.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, that is a family restaurant.
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Nice.
So both my parents.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Are you? You're going to come back to me.
I'm coming back to you.
And I'm going to single out one of my six children. How horrible is that? So not all of my, I mean, all of my kids, obviously, right? But I have, my middle daughter is just this beautiful, amazing, you never know what's going to come out of her mouth, which was super frustrating when she was three. But she's not three anymore. She's an adult and she lives in San Diego. And she's the person that when I have something heavy on my heart, I call her because I know she's going to come at it from a completely different angle.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, she's my person. Yeah, I adore her. Drea.
That's awesome.
My Drea.
Shout out to Drea.
Mm-hmm.
What is your greatest extravagance? Mine is gluten-free food.
I don't feel like that's an extravagance at all. That's just a necessity.
Well, but you don't know what quantity I eat.
I think we could tally. Two of us could tally it up. Extravagance. Stickers in my planner. I feel like it's extravagant that I put stickers in my planner.
I love that you put stickers in your planner.
I color code everything, and I have like five different colors of pens for all the different segments of my life, and recently treated myself to a pack of stickers, and it's the
most. That's so cute.
It's so extravagant.
That's awesome.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, nerds. Right here.
Wow.
Yeah.
Ice cream, caramel, chocolate, and sea salt with something crunchy on it.
Ooh.
Pretzels or something. You know, just
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like we said earlier, sugar fixes everything.
Yeah. Sugar does fix everything.
Little, yeah. Extravagance in terms of food or whatever.
Anything.
I guess stickers. Would be.
Stickers.
I don't even know. The first thing that comes to mind is my little dog. He's just, I want to take him with me everywhere. I almost brought him here today, but I was like, I probably shouldn't.
I probably shouldn't bring my dog.
I just want to take him with me everywhere I go. And I like to dress him up in costumes. So yesterday, for the whole month of October, he's been going around wearing bat wings. And yesterday, I bought him a little Day of the Dead dress. It was so cute. It had sugar skulls all over it. And I was like, I don't care if he's a boy. He's still going to wear the dress.
Don't assume his gender.
I know, exactly. The dog doesn't care.
That's fine.
And he looked adorable. So, yeah.
What kind of dog is he?
He's a little mix, like Chihuahua and Terrier, but he's tiny.
Oh, he's just a little guy.
He's so cute, and he's so scruffy. So, yeah, it's Ollie. I want my extravagance. Dressing him up and taking him out with me everywhere.
Oh, fun.
So, that's awesome. You can put some of Rebecca's stickers on his bat.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah. I've so tried funny. To put some glow in the dark paint on there. It didn't work. I was really disappointed. Whatever.
Now, see, that wasn't so painless. You did great.
It was fine.
See, that's it.
Okay, that's it. We're done?
That's it.
Oh, it was way worse in my head.
It's like a flu shot.
Yeah.
The buildup is horrible, and the actual shot is like not a big deal.
Not so
right?
bad.
All right. Ladies, I'd love to have you chime in at the end of our last segment. Dear Coach gives our listeners the chance to have their emailed questions addressed. And today's Dear Coach is about three initial steps you can take towards building a positive business culture. Leaders talk about the importance of having a vision, mission, and values, but those often remain concepts held in a business owner's head rather than principles that actively guide company actions. I do the following exercises with clients who are looking to take their business to the next level. These form the foundation that support growth, and I'll share real-life examples of each. First, vision is about how we move ourselves and our companies forward in a way that can be distinguished from others in our industry. I work with a mother-daughter-owned website design business. As we brainstormed the vision for their company, they began with pretty generic statements that could have been made by any designer. After asking them questions and getting them to be more specific, they finally declared that what they want is to transform the web industry by eradicating ugly, overpriced, ineffective sites. with that one statement of their role in the larger business world, they had total conviction in how they approached their operations, their marketing, and their branding. They now consider it their quest to, and I quote, eliminate crappy websites from the planet. That's a pretty good vision. Second, mission moves us from the external business world to our internal company expectations, answering the question, what do we want to accomplish? I work with a third-generation pest control company whose owner is highly committed to delivering the ultimate level of service. His mission informs everything we work on together, from new employee orientation and training to creating systems and procedures that ensure the best possible customer experience. Employees know that they're expected to uphold the mission, and they also see the owner walk his talk. In return for outstanding customer service that has built a loyal following, the team receives regular acknowledgments like gift cards and bonuses. So actively practicing what they preach is now embedded into their culture. Third, core business values are critical to attracting individuals who share ethical principles. I like the idea from Gina Wickman's book, Get a Grip. You brainstorm everything you feel is important to your organization's conduct and pare down the list to your top five values. Next, make a chart with the five values listed in a row across the top and the name of everyone in the company listed down the left-hand side. Every single person, including the owner, is evaluated in relation to how they demonstrate the company's shared values. This exercise was very powerful for a particularly gentle client of mine who struggled with firing bad employees. When she could objectively see what her superstars contributed in direct comparison to their problematic counterparts, she understood the disservice she had done to valuable employees. We formed a plan to reward excellence, provide training to those who needed to improve, and fire those unable to change. It transformed the energy in her office when she let a few people go and replaced them with employees who shared the company's values. We have a few minutes left. I wanted to invite each of you to just take a minute and share with us a tip for how you've created a strong company culture. And Sigrid, this time I'll start with you.
Oh. Pass. I don't know how to answer that question. Because it's just, it's the two of us. It's our, you know, we've been doing this together. So we're, you know, we can't do it without each other. Like, so she, my sister takes care of all the business side of things, and I do the cooking and the food side of things. So that, you know, can't have one without the other kind of thing. So how is that?
Did I answer
the question?
Any employees outside of you and your sister?
Yes, I have my sous chef who's been with me for 5-6 years now, and I have my nephew who is my prep cook.
And so, your parents who are the bakers.
And my parents are the bakers. Mm-hmm. And then we've had our two servers with us. Our head server, Jesus, started with us as a busser, and he's now head server. He's been there for 6 years, I think. Mm-hmm. He came on when he was 16. We've watched him grow into a man, get married. He's 22 now.
So, wow, that's cool.
So, yeah.
So do you think the fact that it's been not just a family business, but it involves so many extended members of your family, that just kind of that culture of if you're part of this, you've got each other's backs.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's just kind of an ingrained part of how you function.
Yeah.
And people either respond to that or they don't. But it sounds like they do respond to it, and then they've stayed with you for a very long time.
Yeah. That is one of the things about a family-run business is what I've noticed. You know, we have had a few chefs come and go, and the one thing was like, you know, it's such a tight ship back there, you know, mm-hmm. like some people haven't felt that comfortable being in such a small family-run business. Yeah. And so it just wasn't for them. And I'm like, it's fine, you know. But the ones who get it have stayed with us. So I guess the what we're doing is, as far as culture goes, is just, you know, just showing the how family can just, you know, you can count on your family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, we've been fortunate like that.
Very. And Mary, what about you? You have a business partner. Mm-hmm. You've known Susan for a long time.
Long time.
As things flow down from you and Susan to your staff, what has been something that the two of you have been kind of acutely aware of the whole time?
I think a lot of it has to do with communicating your ideas, and then allowing them to do suggestions and input, and then following some of those suggestions and input that are good.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think that raises them up to be more involved in what's going on in the restaurant too, and being more connected, almost like the family situation binds us together a lot more tightly. But communication, even some of the smaller things, scheduling, you know, asking them for their input
making sure they have a voice.
Yeah, making sure they have a voice and being honest and consistent in everything that you do with them.
How about you, Rebecca?
Similar answer. And we talked about this before, but really getting clear on our values.
Mm-hmm.
And I love Gino Wickman. You should just know that about me. He was in consideration for the living person that I admire the most. And we really went through the whole Gino Wickman's traction program maybe 2 years ago, and we run the shop on those principles. And so being really clear about our values and hiring and sometimes firing around those has really made a difference. And reiterating those values and posting them where our staff can see them and talking about them at our monthly staff meetings and making sure that they're living those values really has made a huge difference in the amount of turnover that we've seen this year.
Yeah. It makes such a great work environment too. They want to be there. They look forward to coming to work.
Well, when they know what is going to happen, right? And
what's
so
expected.
It's right. When you manage those expectations and they know that positive vibes is one of our five core values, right? Like if you've got a bad attitude, don't come.
Yeah.
Right. So, so really it's managing their expectations so that they can help us manage ours as well, and letting them have a voice and making sure that there are times that, you know what, they have great ideas.
Yeah,
and my answer will be like, seriously, we've been at this for 5.5 years and now somebody's coming up with this idea? That's fantastic. We should have been doing that all along.
Right.
And because you just never know when somebody is going to come in with
They've
a different
great ideas.
Yeah, different background, different set of thoughts that
and a fresh point of view.
Yes.
Which is huge. And anything that we can do to make us better and more efficient and ultimately better for the community is that's what we're all about.
That is great feedback. Thank you very much, ladies. I appreciate it. And that brings us to the end of today's episode. If you have a question or problem you'd like for us to talk about during our Dear Coach segment, please email me at stephanie@therisingeffect.com. I invite you to follow the show on our Small Biz Big Voices Facebook page, which includes show notes and announcements for upcoming shows. Next month, we will be celebrating our first full year on air with an interview with celebrated Tucson artist Diana Medeiros. My thanks again to my guests, Mary Steiger of Gourmet Girls Gluten-Free Bakery Bistro, Rebecca Wicker of Dedicated Gluten-Free Bakery and Coffee Shop, and Secret Thompson of The Tasteful Kitchen. My thanks also to my producer, Mark Bishop, and to you for joining us on Small Biz Big Voices.